If you're strong, you can fly. You can reach the other side of the podcast. It's alright, sit and chill. There's an hour left to fill, and we gotta go fast.
That's what so makes sense.
GHC, GHC, GHC.
Sanganuts and Drano drinkers.
GHC, GHC, GHC.
Theorists and overthinkers.
GHC, GHC.
Spinning through this crazy fandom.
GHC, GHC, GHC.
Yes, hello. Welcome back to the GHC podcast with the theme song by Josh. It's always
it's
a
me.
Delight to hear. Yeah,
yeah. And I think we really need to start recording that thing because it's a terrible strain on my hands when I have to.
Yeah, you
got to
stop doing
time.
It live. You're going to get calluses.
The interesting thing is that I actually do all of the harmonies as well at the same time because I have several throats. So
yeah.
Wow,
you
got, it's a real
problem. You got to make your money somehow.
Also, Lee in there. You got to give Lee some credit. Lee's got a beautiful singing voice.
I've got the best singing voice. Sonic boom, sonic boom.
Hey, come on, man.
There you go.
So,
this guy's going
what
to
is this show?
Job.
This is a Sonic the Hedgehog podcast. The only Sonic the Hedgehog podcast. Maybe there's other podcasts. We don't know.
We don't care.
But this is the only one. We got the tood, and we're saying, nah, man. This is it. I am Grant. With me is Josh. Hi,
hello.
Josh.
All right.
And Lee.
Hi.
Hi, Lee. Hi. And Nathan, the administrator of the GHC forum.
Nathan.
Thanks
for trying to go for a Pokemon thing there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that was intense. This week we've got a very special guest.
We've got a guest?
We do. We've got a guest who is outside of our little forum of Sonic Nerds. We've reached out into the ether of other podcasts. So from How Did This Get Played and the Doughboys podcast, we're very excited to welcome Nick Weiger to the show. Hi, Nick.
Here he is.
Hi, glad to be here. Let's go.
Wait a minute. Oh, my God. Already off to the wrong foot. Already tripping right out of the gate. Nick,
some good shit.
Let's start straight off with I know personally you're a huge Mario fan, but you also talk a lot about Sonic. So you know, just through talking to us a little bit just before we started recording, that we're legit Sonic aficionados.
Yes.
And you talk about Sonic, and I assume there is some real love there. There's some sense of ironic love, but there's also some real love there. What's your history with Sonic as a franchise, as a series, did you play the games? Were you a Super Nintendo only kid? Did you have a Sega Genesis? When did you start?
Great questions. I grew up, we were a Nintendo family. And so, yeah, Mario was my first intro into console gaming. My dad was a big computer guy, so I was introduced to PC gaming at a young age, even before console gaming. But yeah, I had a Nintendo and a Super Nintendo, and then eventually a Nintendo 64. And my first dalliance into non-Nintendo hardware was actually the Sony PlayStation. So I didn't own a Sega console until the Dreamcast, which is one of the greatest, I'm sure you guys agree to some degree, one of the greatest consoles of all time. Incredible library.
Big fan.
But as far as my connection to Sonic as a kid, my brother's friend who was super cool as well. He was like older than me and also cool. And like, I wanted to be him, and he had a Sega Genesis, and that was part of it. So that was aspirational for me to like, man, if I could finagle my parents into also getting a Sega Genesis, which was a non-starter. But I would go to his house and like play Sonic and, you know, just be like, just think he was so cool. When Tails came out, I was just absorbed by like the EGMs and game pros at like Sonic 2 and the prospect of adding a new character to the canon. And then, as you know, that process became less of a novelty as time wore on and characters kept being added by the dozens. But it was but I always just thought it was such a cool character. And the games, especially the 2D platformers, were so, so fun, and the physics were so good. The gameplay is so tight. And I finally got a chance to play through them as an adult. And then in addition to just sort of like messing around with them as a kid, and then when I got my Sega Dreamcast, Sonic Adventure was just like I thought was just such an awesome experience. I know it wasn't perfect. I know it was a little buggy, but I was like, this really feels like next-gen platforming. This really feels like the next step from Super Mario 64. I think Super Mario 64 has aged better and is a better game overall, but Sonic Adventure is fucking awesome.
Yeah, we were talking about Sonic Adventure a few episodes back and kind of echoed that same sentiment. I mean, certainly that's my feeling on it, is Mario 64 is absolutely aged better, but like at the time, did you play Dreamcast later, or did you kind of get it in that 99 year 2000 period?
9999. I was there on launch day.
Me too. Right. Yeah, that's right. It was one of the first console I bought with my own money. It was that was a very exciting day. Sonic Adventure, yeah. Ready to Rumble Boxing, NFL 2K.
Yeah, dude.
Had quite a weekend.
And what was, there was one more. I think Soul Calibur was the fourth launch title. Oh, I guess four launch titles. What a launch lineup. Just staggering.
Yeah, amazing launch lineup.
Yeah.
Nick, I have to know, you were talking about you recently played through all the 2D Sonic games, or at least in adulthood. Would you mind ranking them for us? Like, which is your favorite? Which is your least favorite?
This is a really, really good and fraught question. I mean, I'm really partial to Sonic the Hedgehog 2 just as a pure platformer. I think the original Sonic the Hedgehog is really, really great. There's a lot of Sonic CD partisans, I know. My co-host and How This Get Played, Heather Ann Campbell, love Sonic CD. But I think probably I'd give the nod to Sonic 2, just historically. I really, really enjoyed Sonic Mania, which I know is not part of the is a more recent reboot is the wrong term, but reinterpretation of it. But I thought that was just an awesome package and just really absolutely captured what was great about the original games.
And elevates it. I mean, I still think Mania is like the number one. Like, if you're going to start anybody with trying to like introduce them into why do people like Sonic? Why do they like these games? Mania is like, you got to start with Mania. It's the complete
package.
That's
a great point. Yeah.
We have a lot of love for Mania here.
Mania is awesome. Game, man.
So those what were about... all the correct answers, by the way, Nick. So congratulations.
Yeah.
You passed the test.
A little suspiciously too correct, Nick. Well, but you play a lot of games and you've worked in games. Have you played any of I know that you, on the first episode of your podcast, How Did This Get Played, you played through Sonic 06, a game that's still on my like kind of wish list of games to play because I skipped over sort of that. But besides Sonic 06, what are some of the more recent, and Mania, I guess, what are the, have you had any other Sonic adventures?
Yeah. Love that phrasing. Love that framing. Don't rush to get to Sonic to get to play Sonic 06. By the way, it's a mess. Let me think. I think the Sonic and the Mario and Sonic of the Olympic Games, just for the novelty of it. Yeah. These are both kind of cop out answers, but playing as Sonic in Smash Brothers. I mean, I just like I thought he was a really fun character, and it was just. Mm. I don't know. That was it was just one of those things where those two things, Sonic and the Sonic Mario crossover in the Olympic Games series and in Smash Brothers, were both just like, tell a kid in the 90s that was going to happen someday. Unthinkable. It's like Marvel. Really, it's like Spider-Man and Superman being in the same movie. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, Smash Brothers definitely counts, I think, because unfortunately, I guess it's one of the best, most recent appearances of Sonic in a video game.
Right.
It feels like they really tried to work on getting his movement down and make moves that made sense for the character, which, as we know, the Sonic team haven't really bothered with for about 20 years. So,
yeah. I personally think so. I personally think his moveset is great, although if you look around in the larger online fandom, a lot of people are like upset with the Sonic moveset in Smash Brothers. They want him to have there to be more references to Sonic Battle or Sonic Rush other titles.
I've seen that.
He attacks as a ball. He's a pinball character. Yeah, he's a pinball platformer. That's how they translated him, which
is accurate. Are wrong.
Yeah, if there's a fandom that's grumpier and more sour about their own game than the Sonic fandom, it's the Smash Brothers fandom.
Yeah, everything since Melee is just garbage. Yeah. Can I ask you guys about a game that I haven't played that I'm intrigued by, and I want to visit for the first time at some point, which is Sonic Chronicles: The Dark Brotherhood, BioWare RPG. I mean, is it good? How does it play?
It plays.
It's a weird one, isn't it?
Who here has played it? Because I have not. I didn't touch that one at all.
I completed it.
You did? Wow.
You completed it?
Yeah, I mean, I paid for it. Didn't have much going on in my life at the time.
Well, as a result of that, it just sucked all the joy out of your existence.
It's one that's to be seen to be believed. It's got a very interesting soundtrack, some very interesting animatics, if you can call them that. So I think it's good material. If you want to do a podcast on it, there's certainly a lot to talk about. Not necessarily all great.
Got it.
It's interesting too, because, and I guess this is a segue, because this, because the Dark Chronicles, the Dark Brotherhood, Sonic Chronicles, the Dark Brotherhood seems to take a lot of inspiration from the Archie comics. Is that accurately? Okay. Like, it looks like it takes some of the ideas from the Ken Penders Knuckles series of the Dark Brotherhood and incorporates that into its own game. Like, I downloaded it on emulator and have only played a little bit of it before getting too frustrated and then putting it down. But I was curious enough about the story to keep playing it, though not to completion. But that was my sort of sense of it, is that it did seem to have some echoes to the Archie books. Is that right?
Yeah. It's the same.
It's
all the same thing. It's all the stories from the Ken Penders Knuckles comics. So it's the Dark Brotherhood is like the Dark Legion. They're called the Nocturnus. Instead of Julie Sue, you've got Shade the Echidna. Instead of the Twilight Zone, it's the Twilight Cage. It's like they just painted a mustache on it and said, no, this is our idea.
isn't that why Ken Penders had such a bee in his bonnet, partly, as well?
It was one of maybe dozens of reasons.
One of many bees in several bonnets, yeah.
The whole beehive in that bonnet.
Yeah. Well, before we get into the weeds of that, I guess, Nick, what's also your experience with, like, Sonic as outside of the games format? Were you reading the comic books as a kid? Were you watching the cartoons? Because when I asked you for, I was like, well, what's something about Sonic you want to talk to? You were immediately like, we got to talk about Jules Hedgehog. We got to talk about Sonic's dad. And there's a number of ways to kind of talk about Sonic's dad, but I'm curious your relationship with the comics, if they were something that you actually read or more of just like this sort of from a distance, like curiosity of them.
It's the latter. I mean, I didn't read the comics growing up but I was always fascinated by how dense the lore is. And just when I learned via the internet much later after it was established about the existence of Jules Hedgehog and that Sonic has like a robot dad, I was like, this is wild. I mean, I love it. I could not love it more, but what is happening here? Like, what is the context for this? I've seen panels of the comics. I've looked at pages of it, you know, that were turned into JPEGs, but I never sat down and read a Sonic comic regularly.
So maybe we can give you some context of Jules Hedgehog and how he came to be, and you guys can help me out with this. So Ken Penders is the writer that we're referencing that brought Jules and his wife Bernadette, named after Ken Pender's own wife, as it turns out, Bernie.
Oh.
What a lovely tribute.
What a lovely tribute. Yes. And that's the end of the story. That's it, actually. And everything just worked out. So Ken was the lead writer for the first 100 plus issues of the Archie Sonic book and absolutely deepened the lore as much as possible, primarily by adding more and more dads to the Sonic universe. He gave Knuckles a dad. He gave Tails a dad. He gave Sonic a dad. He increased the importance of Princess Sally Acorn's dad. And it also made, you know, some little canon or changes by Sonic the Hedgehog's not his real name. It is, in fact, Ogilvy Maurice Hedgehog. Little things like this to deepen your appreciation.
Not canon, not my Sonic.
And then the way that the Ken Penders saga ends is in the sort of famous or infamous lawsuit that he won against Archie, saying that they couldn't use his creator-owned characters, which include Jules Hedgehog, who is Sonic as a robot with a little tuft of hair coming out of his forehead. And then they disappeared from the comics entirely, and then that was it. And Jules Hedgehog, his time while in the comics, also didn't do a lot. He has some notable moments. He is the first in the lore of the comics. He's the first one to be roboticized by Sonic's other father figure, Uncle Chuck. Hmm. And then he's the last to be de-roboticized. He cannot be de-roboticized for whatever reason. He does die, and Sonic brings him back with a power ring. And then he just kind of hangs around and he like defends Sonic from time to time. And that's essentially what Jules is doing in the book before he gets yanked away from him, before he gets yanked out of the lore entirely. That's the entirety of Jules in a brief little nutshell there.
So all this is coming. All this is Ken Pender's brainchild.
Yes.
Right.
I wonder what was going on in his childhood and his domestic life where he was just obsessed with making sure that everyone has a dad. We've all got dads.
They have shitty dads as well.
Yeah.
maybe Ken's dad was roboticized. I feel like maybe there was some sort of industrial accident or something, right, and he never got over it. I don't know.
Yeah, so the running theme you see with these, the running theme you see with these father characters is that they're really shitty and controlling, and they lie to their kids a lot, and the kids are like, "Oh, Dad, how can you do this to me?" Ah. But then someone else says, "No, your dad did it for your own good, and he's the good guy actually." And they're like, "Oh, yeah, okay, I guess my dad was right." And there's at least one issue where it's sort of like, in memory of my own dad or whatever, Mr. Ken Pender Sr. or whatever his name is. There's really something there.
That's heavy.
He was working out some father issues through the Sega Sonic IP, seems like. It was definitely like
who here could say hasn't done that?
Sure. Who hasn't put their own father issues into and explored that with the Sonic characters? That was kind of always the theme, right? It was like this, your dad's a piece of shit, but don't worry. He's doing it for his own reasons. Father knows best. Just trust daddy. And Jules, I think on that spectrum of bad dads was relatively more innocuous. He was not as aggressively shitty as Knuckles' dad was portrayed as, but that's more so because the Knuckles characters were more under the Pender's domain. He was more actively creating and building those characters.
I think only main issue I have with the whole arrangement is that all of those characters are just so fucking somber. Like Sonic as a character in all other media is just so like vibrant, colorful. And, you know, he's like, yeah, all right. You know, he's like super like excitable. And then you've just got these meandering fucking storylines about like government intrigue and betrayal and political unrest, and I'm like, dude, I don't know, man. Like, his dad wasn't he wasn't a real fucking monster, but like, he was just so dour. There was no, you know, there was no hint of this is where the character of Sonic has come from. If you look at an actual father mother figure, you know, like the character, why is Sonic so carefree? Why is he so excitable and energetic? And, you know, it's just like, and then you've just got these normal human characters in Sonic suits with little quiffs, just like wandering about. You see what I mean? There's no kind of, there's nothing in the story that suggests this is why the characters are who they are. Exactly.
It's a weird thing. It's something that seems to be built out in a number of different like Sonic media, and that giving them a family, I guess. There was the Sonic cartoon, Sonic Underground, which gives him a mom and two siblings. In the Sonic movie, the 2020 movie, there's no other hedgehogs, but we see he's raised by an owl named Longclaw. So it's kind of like this weird thing of like needing to explain his parents or where he comes from, but without actually properly sort of explaining it. And also, Lee, what was the you were showing us like images of a manga where there's another Sonic dad.
I mean, this could be an episode in its own. There was a Sonic manga in 1992, like the very start of 1992. So Sonic 1 had only been out for a few months, and they take a sort of Shazam, Captain Marvel, Billy Batson kind of approach to it, where you've got this nerdy little boy called Nicky, and he transforms into Sonic the Hedgehog, like in Times of Need. But he's only aware of this. This little hedgehog boy who transforms into Sonic, who's later revealed to be himself from the future when he's a cool 16-year-old with super speed. But Nicky, he has a family. He's got a dad called Paulie, and he used to be a test pilot, and now he delivers mail via seaplane, and he's just all around a better character than Jules. He's a cool guy, and we like him. Like, everyone here likes him.
He's like Baloo in fucking Tailspin, bro.
Yeah, he's very much a Tailspin Baloo kind of character. He might even predate him. I'm sure that's where they got it from.
He's got the scarf. He's got that dad bod as well that we love.
Yeah, I was gonna say, can you describe how he looks? Because I've seen the image, but so Jules looks like Sonic as a, he looks kind of like a early version of Metal Sonic with a tuft of hair coming out of the front. What is the manga dad look like? I've seen him picture. He's got glasses and like a beer belly, maybe.
It's Nikki with the glasses.
Paulie's the dad.
Paulie's the dad. He's a bit taller than Sonic, you know, adult sized. Like Josh said, he's got a bit of a dad bod. He wears a cool pilot jacket. He's got a little bit of hair, but not like the Archie comics where they've just got a toupee on. It's just
it's blue. Awful.
Yeah,
it's a fucking unicorn horn or something. It's just Sonic with just a big pink fucking gross ponytail coming out of their forehead.
It's fucking ridiculous.
You were saying about painting a mustache on it and calling it your own. They literally fucking did that with Uncle Chuck. Sonic but mustache?
So this manga, it did have a little bit of oversight from the Sonic team from Sega Japan, so the characters looked very much in line with the characters from the early Sonic games. So he had a bit of hair, but it was in the same sense that Tails has hair, just a few spikes, and he's just a blue all over. So yeah, it just looks like pilot jacket.
I've seen the art, and it's got a kind of that old Oshima drawings from the first game kind of style to it, which is lovely.
Yeah, big boots. So yeah. He smokes a pipe, little Popeye pipe. That's how you know he's a dad.
Yeah.
Has anybody's dads ever smoked pipes? I don't think I've ever seen that in person.
I smoked a pipe next to a girl once, got her pregnant straight away. So you got to be careful with these things. That's how it happens. Wow. That's how it happens, fellas.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
That's what I said to her, and I wish I hadn't. So
it sounds like the tone of this manga was, which was contemporaneous with the first Sonic, it was a little bit also kind of light and fun. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, so it ran through a bunch of different magazines, one for first graders, one for second graders, all the way up to sixth grade. So the tones varied a bit. They had different writers and artists on each magazine, but it was all very slice of life, lighthearted. Got the little nerdy hedgehog boy Nikki having little slice of life adventures with his friends, and then sometimes Dr. Eggman would attack, or sometimes he'd get bullied by this mean lizard boy, and then it would always resolve. He'd transform into Sonic. Sonic would save the day. Then he would fall into water, change back into Nikki, and Nikki would be like, "What happened? Where? What? Who's this Sonic?"
Which contrasts quite a bit with how Sonic's dad is in the Archie books, because everything relating to Jules is tragic or somber, kind of like Josh was saying.
He's a motherfucker.
Yes, he's pretty much just literally every beat that involves Jules, where he's not just in the background of characters of and then here's also some of the people that you've saved. Sonic, if there's something that's focused specifically on Jules, it is always a downbeat thing of hey, Sonic, have some breakfast with your family. Oh, wait, your parents are robots. They can't eat. They'll just watch you eat.
Anxiety. The anxiety.
Just watch you eat. It's so strange.
All the familiar context for Sonic in the American comics, all those, is just trying to infuse as much tragedy as possible into everything.
Your parents
are trapped in robot bodies forever and they can never get out. Which is a pretty interesting storytelling conceit, and it's not something that they actually did in the games at any point.
Right. No, I always love that his dad is a robot, and I found that just such a huge swing, and I like it when this franchise takes huge swings. That's kind of what's fascinating about it. But to talking about tone real quick, Because the first time I remember as a gamer kind of encountering, wait, Sonic's taking a turn more for the these kind of these bleaker, more adult themes was Sonic Adventure 2 for Dreamcast, which started to get kind of a taste for that. And then obviously that was eventually followed up by the Shadow the Hedgehog game, which I thought was like, which was, I think, kind of was known as kind of the the first time they were going with full on like kind of dark edgelord Sonic. And then of course Sonic 06 is like very like, it's just like kind of a very somber, grim, almost fatalistic sort of narrative. You know, I played through it, I was like, Jesus, there's so little levity in this. It's just everything is so serious. It's like if the first 10 minutes of Up continued for the remaining 90 minutes. And I'm curious, like, but does that all come from, you know, Sonic Team? Does that all come from Sega Japan, or was that partially informed? Because I'm starting to infer this maybe partially informed by the Ken Penders comics.
It's interesting.
There's a few things going on here. So the Archie comic book itself was based on the Sonic the Hedgehog cartoon produced by Deke. And they had two shows going on at the same time. They had the syndicated show, Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog,
which we love.
It was very, very Looney Tunes. Scratch and Grounder and Coconuts, very Looney Tunes. Then they had Sonic the Hedgehog, which was the bigger budget show that aired on ABC on Saturday mornings. And the early issues of the Archie comic, they'll take the characters and setting from the serious Saturday morning cartoon, but they'd have a very slapsticky, fourth wall breaking tone of the Adventures of cartoon. But then as the years went on, they started adapting the more serious tone of the Saturday morning cartoon into the Archie comics. So that's where they got the concept of roboticization from. So in the video games, it's just Robotnik traps little animals in cute little robots, then you smash the robots and they fly away. In the cartoon, it's like he traps the animals in tubes and like turns them into robots, like their flesh is turned into robots. And yeah, that's where that came
always
from.
Seemed like such a weird thing as a kid too. It's like, what are you talking? Why is roboticization such a problem? Sonic just bops on their head. Tails can do it by accident. You're telling me they can't free these guys with just a bop? That's how you do it. You do it with the bops.
No, it was magic. I don't like it because, I said it on the other one. It was just like, it feels like magic. They put them in a magic tube and they turn into a robot all over. And I'm like, what? No, it made more sense to use them as like in the games. Just, they're like batteries, aren't they? They're like living batteries.
But it's interesting to think about the tone in terms of, because and maybe there was sort of like some kind of symbiotic relationship between the extra media, like the comics, influencing the game developers in Japan. We know that that was at least part of the case behind Sonic Forces when they were wanting to get back to a slightly darker storyline in the more recent game. But when you're talking about Sonic Adventure 2, which also interestingly brings up the first time when they're trying to add some, pathos to it. They give Eggman a dad. Oh, Robotnik's got a great grandfather who looms large in his memory. Or in Shadow the Hedgehog, it's Shadow wondering who's his dad. And it turns out his dads are aliens. So there's a lot of like, I guess it's just sort of like the low hanging fruit for like, well, we've got to add some edge to this story. So let's talk about the dads. Let's get the dads in there. And it is interesting and strange. Sonic 06 is also, I mean, obviously it's very, very strange, but when you're talking about dads, you can also talk about Sonic's real dads, of which he's got arguably three, right? He's got Yuji Naka, Naoto Oshima, and Takashi Yasuhara, right? And so it was Hirokazu. Oshima who did the designs.
Hirokazu Yasuhara.
Yasuhara. Sorry. Yes. Whoops. My bad.
Carol Yas.
Yeah. Why did he use that pseudonym in the
credits?
They all had pseudonyms.
They all had like fucking gamer tags, basically.
Naka's
like,
was U2.
Yeah, Big Island.
Oshima, Big Islands.
I think it was a thing back then to use like a nickname in the game credits or whatever.
Yeah, Yasuhara companies couldn't steal the talent away.
Oh, that's funny.
That's why there's a cheat code. Yeah, there's a cheat code in Sonic 1 so you can see their real names.
Really?
They, wow. Yeah, they snuck that in there so you can do a cheat code and then see the real staff credits.
Naka sent that code to Nintendo so that they could give him a call.
Oh, okay, you've got
what a great industry where the people who actually create something have to hide their names as an Easter egg.
I think that sort of changed very shortly after Sonic 1, because I think Sonic 2 was more real names by the time you got to Sonic 2 and Sonic CD.
Were willing to actually take that credit. In the first one, it seems like they're hedging their bets. They're hedgehogging their bets a little bit of like, do we really want to be known for this? But okay, so Yasuhara did the maps, Oshima did the designs, and Naka was the programmer. But then Naka, as the Sonic games continue to get produced and this team shuffles back and forth, Naka's eventually put in charge of all of it. He's the producer, and it does seem like some of those darker ideas might be coming from him, given that, you know, he's leading or co-leading the development of Sonic Adventure 2 through to 06, where he leaves midway through the project. But before he left, it was part of his idea, I believe, to want to make it more like Batman Begins in terms of tone.
Right. Interesting. Yes.
Yeah, so Yuji Naka actually said around the time when he was still attached to the Sonic 2006 game, he said there's like huge audiences discovering like Spider-Man and X-Men through the movies, through like the Marvel movies. So he wanted to do that for Sonic. He saw Sonic as like a cool Hollywood style character. So you can see how it went more in that direction.
It went a bit Final Fantasy. That's the problem, didn't they? You
know,
made it more like a ridiculous fucking...
Yeah. It was 14 years too early.
Yeah, well, as we know now, yeah. I think it just missed the fundamental appeal a little bit too much. They just, as you were saying, just kind of went a bit too serious. And the games before, like the Mega Drive games, even up to Sonic Adventure, even Sonic Adventure 2, I'd argue that they have these grander scale plots, but they're still a little bit more anime, a little bit. They've got still like a touch of lightheartedness to them. And even by the time you get to Adventure 2 and it's all taking place in San Francisco and it's all like, we've got to save the president and shit, you know, like, it's, even then it does go a little bit of Hollywood, but even then it's still unmistakably Sonic. And then, I don't know, you come up with this other thing where I feel like, that was kind of the final straw. Maybe that's why Naka fucked up.
There's this interesting thing with Sonic where it seems like it's the series constantly wants to be something other than what it is.
Yeah.
Like even in the classic games, it's like, well, we kind of wish we could be Dragon Ball Z meets Star Wars. We wish we could be Batman Begins later. When Ken Penders is writing it, he was making almost no attempt to hide that he'd rather be he'd rather be writing Star Trek episodes.
Right.
Yeah,
that to me is easier to put together. Like, okay, Ken Benders, would rather this was just a thing he did for money, and so he's just injecting his own aesthetic into it, his own themes into it. As for Yuji Naka himself, who I always thought of as the main Sonic guy, and a big part of that is that I know that a large amount of his programming from a development side was dedicated towards getting the physics right. And I feel like the physics are so much of that game, the physics are so tight in those original 2D Sonics. And that's part of what makes them still so playable. But if you look at his credits, and I'd look them up in advance, and I believe he made Sonic the Hedgehog 1. I believe that was the credit for that. He was like 26 or 27. He was, he was pretty young. And that wasn't his first game. He'd been working in games for a while up until then, basically right out of college or maybe earlier than that. Then he goes on to work for the Sonic franchise for basically the next 10 to 15 years of his life. And I think there's probably something of just like kind of maturing as an artist, but also kind of being, having some other projects he made. Nights into the Dreams, I think, is the big one people think about. But being tethered to that IP, and maybe you want to explore some other themes, but like you have to keep making Sonic. So, how do I interject this into Sonic's lore? And then as a result, it ends up getting, stupid.
There's a lot of that where he was kind of like chafing against having to be, keep making Sonic games. I think it's an interesting contrast to a lot of the other games that were produced in the Sonic Team era, or the Naka Sonic Team era, right? Because you have like Nights into Dreams and Billy Hatcher, and the other games, the non-Sonic games that were made around that time seemed to be much more lighthearted and kind of like kid focused in contrast to like Sonic, which was, you know, getting really deep and heavy and dark.
So that makes it even more bizarre then, doesn't it? They had the perfect outlets, you know. They could have made Billy Hatcher a miserable, sinister, post-apocalyptic adventure, but they didn't, did they? In the future, there is only eggs, you know. They didn't bother with any of that. So missed opportunities.
Did Phantasy Star Online ever get as dark as Sonic Adventure 2?
They're like pretty analogous, I think. It's about as dark, I think. You have this major cosmic entity, right, and it's going to destroy the world. So similar themes there.
That was like their real sort of teen franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah, contextually, as like a pseudo, you know, I don't know what to classify as like a pseudo MMO, a progenitor of MMOs. It's like, it's kind of almost just... And then also kind of had the Phantasy Star series was already established as kind of like, it's a little bit more not adult, but a little bit more of a, you know, high fantasy slash, you know, that weird sort of high fantasy slash futurism thing that seems to exist in only in RPGs. It didn't seem out of place as it does in the Sonic franchise.
No. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. But it was well established, Sonic, with an aesthetic and everything. And I think because they borrowed so many visual cues as well, you're expecting, like Grant was saying, like Dragon Ball Z crossed with Star Wars, crossed with Studio Ghibli, you know. And you're not getting that. You're getting, I don't know what you're getting, to be honest.
Yeah, it's hard to take it too seriously when on the Mega Drive, the biggest threat was a Death Star with a mustache on it.
Robot, you know, wasps and shit, like big googly eyes. They don't have the googly eyes anymore. They have angry eyes now.
I thought it was cool when we went to Cosmic Entity in Sonic Adventure 1 with Perfect Chaos, and then they did it again in Sonic Adventure 2, and then again in Sonic 2006, and I've lost count now of how many times. Oh, it was an Unleashed as well.
They're doing a Marvel Universe shit, you know, with a big blue laser going up into the sky. It's that equivalent. It's the like, oh no, Robotnik's lost control of a thing and it's turned into a giant fucking space lizard made of crystals and it's going to eat the world. Like,
you think Eggman would have learned his lesson after four or five times?
He has now, hasn't he? He just tried to chain a load of planets together to make a fucking theme park. So that's a lot more in line with the big fat boy that we know, and we like it. And Sonic Colors Ultimate coming soon. And all good retailers just getting the little sponsorship in there. Sorry.
It's just interesting definitely during that period of Dreamcast or that kind of early 2000s period when Sonic Team was making not just Sonic games, it was pretty exciting. Knights and Burning Rangers, Phantasy Star Online, all within like this 5-year period. And they seeming like these auteurs of gaming that are like aiming to rival Nintendo in terms of creative output. But there definitely does seem to be like this deeper just confusion about self with the Sonic franchise of like, what do people even like about me? Why is it just because I'm fast? I guess we just got to make everything very fast. Is it the loops? Then maybe we'll just have everything be cutscenes of loops. And then for a period, it kind of veers into like, maybe it's this edgelord sort of stuff that people like.
I think there's also was a challenge of, you know, because I think it's easy to forget that you know, late 90s, early 2000s, everyone was just still figuring out what worked in a 3D gameplay environment. Yeah. Like how is 3D action gameplay going to work? And Sonic so much was like the sensation of speed and linear movement from left to right and across the screen. And that's like a thing you can translate that into 3D. And I think they did that pretty effectively with a lot of the set pieces in the Dreamcast Sonic Adventure games.
Yeah.
But when you see other games are like, oh, there's starting to be, more of an open world sort of sandbox sort of feel. There's starting to be more exploration and on the platform side in particular, like the idea of collecting things. It starts to be like, well, how do we integrate these sort of gameplay conventions with the Sonic characters? And I think that ends up being like, well, now we've got to introduce new characters, or we've got to just like change up what's fun and interesting about Sonic to ascribe to these conventions. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, a lot of it, I think, was them trying to graft this existing, just trying to figure out how we're going to make Sonic work in this new context as gameplay was as games were entering a new era.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of what you mentioned about what was being touched on about about formulaic things and about returning to the same themes. It's like, but there are, I mean, the big one, obviously, the one that Sonic is always compared to, Mario has been like doing the same playbook over and over and over again. And it's just sort of like, you can do that. I think you probably need to keep getting new talent in there to take the reins. And the people now making this are the people that grew up with it and have an appreciation for it. You know, it's like the Dave Filoni model over with Star Wars.
Yeah. I mean, Mania was like the best example of like, well, just kind of like let the fans take charge, because these guys seem to understand it in a deeper way than the other creators do. But when you compare it to the Japanese made Sonic games, there still seems to be that confusion and that hedging of bets by adding in multiple different play styles. And I guess, you know, as you think about it too, when you think about it in terms of, I mean, we're kind of linking all these ideas to the idea of like Sonic's dads, right? So it's like Sonic on one level is just never supposed to work. The loops were not supposed to work, but it was Naka's like programming genius that was able to like get those to work in a 2D space. It probably shouldn't have worked that Sonic would rival Mario and be able to, you know, get the Genesis into a strong foothold in the market in the West and in Europe. But it did. And then it's almost like it's kind of like cursed with its own success, because then it's like, well, what do we do with it? We've got a hedgehog who goes fast. Now what? And the now what is what everybody else is like, I guess give him a dad, is what Ken Pender says. And it's like, well, I guess make him black with red trim and give him a gun is what Yuji Naka says. The movie is like, well, probably there was an owl involved and then he's got to hang out with cops.
Yeah, make him really nervous. And, you know, make him a nervous boy that likes Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, the feeling I always got with that is that like Sonic kind of was lightning captured in a bottle. And they were always kind of trying to recreate that instead of going to the fundamentals and the basics, like Nick, you were saying about the Mario games, like having a very good understanding of what works and what people like about it, and then iterating on that instead of trying to reinvent the wheel every single time.
Yeah.
Sorry, Josh,
no,
I didn't mean to say
no, you're far more important than me, Grant. Go ahead.
No, I'm really not. Don't do that. Why?
I can't even remember what I was going to say now. Go ahead, mate. It's fine.
Ah, oh, man. Well, I was wondering if any of us have played any of Naka's post-Sonic Sonic Team stuff, including Balan Wonderworld.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, what a crazy coincidence. Wow. And I did. I played Balan Wonderworld?
Well, it's Wonderworld, isn't it? I think.
I keep wanting to call it Wonderland, and it's not.
Oh, everyone does.
Okay. Wonderland is a thing that people say. Alice in Wonderland. It's like an existing phrase.
It's a
Wonderworld
thing,
is invented,
It's in there. So, okay.
He wanted to go bigger.
I did. Yeah.
Too much wonder for just a land.
Yeah. You can see that ambition that Naka brings to each project in Balan Wonderworld. Wonderland? No, World. It's got to be World. Wonder Universe thing is the next.
All right. See, Atlantis could only fit 20 costumes. They had 80. It's got to be a world.
So many costumes. I played the demo. It's a computer game. That's my entire review. I was playing it like because I was so stoked, bro. Like, I'm not one of those people who just thinks it's cool to hate things. I just hate things regardless. I was actually genuinely looking forward to it because of the aforementioned, you know, knights, burning rangers, all that. I played all that growing up. You know, I had a Sega Saturn as a kid. God help me, and then Dreamcast. So you know, I had that old school blue sky Sega look to it, and I remember posting on the forum before it completely shit the bed and just saying like, God, I'm so, you know, I'm on the edge of my seat for this fucking game. And I got the demo and I played it, and my girlfriend was watching me play it, and she's just looking at this look of just disbelief on her face, like, is this it? And I'm like, no, honestly, babe, no, do you know what? It's actually right. No, it's very relaxing. There's not a lot of, you know, tension or drama or enemies at all, or really anything to do. I'm just sort of running around. But it's nice, isn't it? It's just nice to just run around sometimes and just relax. And I can't get over this fence. I can't get over this fucking fence. Jump. I can't jump. How do I can't get where? How do I have to wear a sunflower hat? Okay, I can't find it. Where is it? Where's the sunflower hat? Fuck this. Why is there a giant farmer? Stop looking at me.
Right.
And it got worse, and it just all collapsed around me. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say about it that hasn't been said by a million YouTubers already.
Right.
I want to say I see what they were going for, but like, dude, I really don't. I don't.
I see what they were going for. They were going for like Mario Odyssey, but they just didn't really have. I don't know whether they didn't have the time or the budget or the right people working on it.
Any of that?
I think it was poisoned conceptually. Just that slavish kind of adherence to the one button thing is really just fundamentally hard to build a compelling game around that.
But even, which I wonder if Naka thinks is like his calling card. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if that he was like, no, it's a Naka game. It has to be one button. So that's it, but it's like, oh, it really doesn't work well with these features, not to mention any device that anybody's going to be playing on has lots of buttons, so maybe we should just have maybe two buttons, maybe three buttons.
One button. Fuck you.
Did you create Sonic the Hedgehog? I didn't think so. One button. I'm out. I'm leaving for the day. Time to go race my cars.
It's just ridiculous. As controllers have more and more buttons as time goes on, eventually we're going to have, you know, 20 or more buttons on a control pad. And we're playing games where you still... I like to think that, like, when they're like, okay, so, you know, we've got the new boss is coming in. We've got a new project to talk about. And then, like, he walks into the fucking bullpen and they all just look up like, oh, shit. Like, here comes one button Naka. Oh fuck. Oh god damn, you know. So I don't understand the adherence to it.
Yeah, we have to
at least have a button to pause, please.
Yeah, no. at least let us.
We have to mention this now. The news of... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say with Balan Wonderworld, the only button you really need is the power button.
Yikes.
Oh
yeah, we What,
say it again.
What news was it that... Oh, hang on. Sorry, go on.
Oh, I was just saying that we recently got news, I think it was a week or two ago, right, that Naka had left the position that he was working at Square Enix, the publisher of Balan Wonderworld, and in a tweet that was translated from Japanese into English, he mentioned something about how he might think about retirement now, and I believe he's about 55 years old now, which is pretty young. So how do we feel about, like, you know, his post-Sonic career and whether he still has a good game in him or not? I feel skeptical of that at this point now. Yeah, I'm not sure. And I've heard some of the post-Sonic games he made were pretty good, like the Rodea, the Sky Soldier, I think, which I haven't played yet. But
yeah, people swear by the Wii version. Apparently the Wii U and 3DS versions are a bit of a Balan Wonderworld situation.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
But no, people do have good things to say about the Wii version. The game I quite liked, I never played the full thing, was Ivy the Kiwi, with a question mark. That's not just my usual upspeak. That is Ivy the Kiwi. Ivy the Kiwi, maybe.
I never played that one. What was that like? What did it play like?
Was the game as lacking confidence as the title?
Was it like
press A if you want to? It's up to you. I don't really know.
But only A. You're only allowed to press A.
If I'm remembering correctly, because it's been years and years, I think it was actually a zero button game. It was all touchscreen, so you just like draw little lines for Ivy the Kiwi to walk on, and you just try to guide this little kiwi to the goal and maybe collect things along the way. And
I feel like it was like Lemmings, but with one character.
Yeah, and Naka...
Kind of?
Yeah, Naka's actually said that Lemmings is one of his favourite games ever.
Oh,
so,
shit.
It's very much Lemmings, but with a touchscreen and a little kiwi. And yeah, it was a good bit of fun. And I think that's... You know, as much as we like rag on like one button Naka, when it works, it works. In Sonic, it worked. in Nights into Dreams, it worked. And here in Ivy the Kiwi, it's like you didn't need any extra complications. It was just like the DS was new, touch phones were new. So he was doing something simple and easily understood with that new technology.
From a design standpoint, and from an end user standpoint, I admire the adherence to just like, let's see what we can do with a really, really simple control scheme. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's cool and an interesting, you know, approach for a creator to take. As far as Balan Wonderworld, which I haven't played, it just seems like it was maybe, I don't know, it might have just been too ambitious for. You know, it seems like he's maybe sort of settled into kind of a you know, later career period where he's working on things that are a little bit smaller, a little bit more of not indie games, but having more of an indie game sort of feel. And then to just take on this big, you know, gigantic in scope 3D, you know, adventure game just feels like it's a lot to do, especially with with the expectations of modern production values in games.
Yeah, for sure. It seemed that would have been a troubled production to some degree.
I would love for Naka to have like a third act. You know, I hope he finds, you know, some way to land on his feet. Maybe he comes back to Sega and develops some new IP there and like that's some love. Yeah. But either way, I'm like starting to like view his life and his career as this sort of like biopic. He's an interesting figure to me in that way because I feel like with like Miyamoto, you know about his childhood, you know some of his design philosophies, but he doesn't seem to be as mercurial of a figure as Naka does, at least in terms of what we know sort of publicly, right? Like after the development of Sonic 1, Naka quits Sega and is done with it. He's hoping to get a call from Nintendo. He's out of there. Then he gets recruited by Mark Cerny to join the USA Sonic team. At Sega Technical Institute, makes Sonic 2, Sonic 3, but there's this friction always with Naka, and you hear stories about how he's always maybe a little difficult to work with. He doesn't like working with the American designers, which seems completely understandable. But you know, there's also the story of like when Peter Moore was in charge of Sega of America, trying to bring them market data that they need to like be shaking up things in terms of their game development in Japan, and Naka and Yu Suzuki being like, no, we don't believe this. Peter Moore telling the translator to tell him to go fuck off. And he quits. leaving in the middle of Sonic 06, starting his own company. And then now with Bet, like he's an interesting guy. He's somebody that I wish I knew more about. He's somebody that I want to like I want to see him do well. And yeah. I find that he is maybe kind of closest to the spirit of Sonic. He seems like he's somebody that loves thrills. Maybe he's a little impatient. Maybe he's got a little bit of an attitude, but he's able to do some things that are really cool that nobody else could do, like getting loops to work in 2D. Yeah. And you know, it would just be nice. Maybe it would just be nice and harmonious for him to somehow come back. There's not really a need for him, I would feel, at Sega or Sonic Team anymore because Iizuka is now in his former position. But at the same time, you know, I don't know. It's hoping that there's more to his story than Balan Wonderworld.
Yeah, I hope so too. Sure. I have to point out I don't think I mentioned it before on the podcast, but I did actually get to meet Naka and Iizuka 5 years ago. I think it was at the 25th anniversary event at South by Southwest here in Austin. They had a panel. They had some announcements, and those two folks were both there, and I got them to sign my copy of Sonic Adventure 1 and Sonic the Hedgehog 3. And when I was talking to Naka, he was pretty quiet and reserved, but nice. And I was kind of like gushing to him fanboy style, kind of like I was doing to you, Nick, in the call before we started recording. But Iizuka was a total sweetheart. He was like, he was talking to me in English, and he actually struck up a conversation with me, I think, on more than one occasion. He was like just trying to talk with me, asked me what I liked about living in Austin and like what I liked about the Sonic games and all that. He was,
You want to get dinner later?
Like that guy.
You're like, I've got to get going, Iizuka, but this was really nice. It was too good, too much.
I was thinking a little bit about Yuji Naka earlier. Actually, I was talking with my co-host from Out of This Complaint, Heather Ann Campbell and Matt Apodaca about this after, you know, Balan Wonderworld was just kind of bombed. And I don't know if this is a perfect comparison, but I was kind of like, as a director, which I think is sometimes a useful way to think about, figures in game development, big, you know, superstar figures in game development, is there a directorial analog? Mm-hmm. You know, Miyamoto, it seems like it's a pretty straightforward Spielberg. I think Yuji Naka might be kind of like a Brian De Palma, where you look at like his early career is just like, oh wow, he'd made some awesome movies that had this indelible impact on cinema, that still, you know, still exist. And then his late career kind of trails off, and there's even, it kind of feels like at some point he's kind of trying to run back the old playbook, but he's just kind of, to mix sports metaphors, like lost his fastball. Like he just can't quite execute it in the same way anymore. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's that said, I mean, it's not taking anything away from the guy, because in terms of his contributions to, I mean, his contributions to gaming as a creator, he's accomplished so much. Yeah. So maybe he hasn't replicated his earlier career, but who has?
Right. Yeah. No, great point. I mean, he made Sonic. Fuck you.
Yeah.
You can't take that away. He made it with one button. How many buttons do you need for this? I made Sonic with one fucking button. Translate that.
And like even before Sonic, he was doing like all these impressive arcade ports, and he did the 3D like dungeon maze in the original Phantasy Star on Master System.
Oh, wow.
And that really blew people away at the time.
Yeah, that was wild.
He was always kind of a tech wizard early on, I think.
Yeah, because that was the thing, because as someone who didn't have a Genesis, was Phantasy Star 1 on Master System?
Yes.
Phantasy Star 1 was on Master System. I don't remember if that was the one. Did that have the 3D maze, or was it Phantasy Star 2 that introduced it?
It was
Phantasy Star 1.
Oh, it was in the first one. Okay. So yeah, it was a thing that was fairly mind-blowing, because you'd see that in PC RPGs, but like a console one, like the idea that you go underground and you have this sort of this first-person perspective to navigate, it felt very, very, it felt future-y.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and on an 8-bit system. It's wild. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of technological talk. You know what? I feel like we're piling on Naka a bit here, and like I've kind of gone off him a little bit. I feel like he's gone down in my estimation in latter days, because I think like, I don't know, I'm pretty hot-headed myself, man, and whenever I hear this shit where I'm like, you know, Sonic's creator Yuji Naka, and I'm there like I'm tapping my foot and I'm like, what about the guy that fucking drew him? Like, I don't know. Sonic, as we say, trades so much off of his design. I place a lot of emphasis on the guy that fucking designed him. That's where I'm at with it. So I'm saying, Oshima, I love you, man. Sonic CD, not sure about it. But you know what, mate? Well done. You know, we love the 90s of it all. And fucking, as we were saying as well, the importance of Yasuhara actually making a fun, interesting game full of cool things for the character to play with and do and interact with. And, you know. And
it's those three together, right? Like, those three together are the proper...
He had three dads, like
in that whole three dads and a little hedgehog.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Like, they should have made a third one, and it should have been that. That's my hot take for the week.
Should we do? What do you think, Josh? Should we do last gasps?
I feel like we can wrap it up. I think I just did mine. Fuck. Okay. Yeah. Go on.
Okay. Here we go. This is the time for last gasps. This is the time where we do our final hot takes on the subject of Sonic's papas.
Right.
Oh, that was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, that was beer, and that was all bubbles.
Oh my god.
Oh Jesus.
Oh Christ. God.
No,
damn
I really
it.
Am. Gasping.
We gotta start editing.
No, it's good. It's good work. It's fine. It's not family friendly. It's fine. We're drinking beer. I'm of the legal drinking age. It's fine.
Are you sure?
I don't endorse it. I don't endorse. I know. I don't act like it or sound like it. I don't endorse it. Neither do I endorse smoking. Neither do I endorse playing Sonic the Hedgehog games, but here we are.
And yeah, you do all those things.
yeah. Last gasps. Who's got one? Not me.
All right, quick last gasps is where we go around and we do our last hot takes on these subjects. So here's a quick one. We shouldn't know who Sonic's dad is. We don't need to see the fictional fathers in there or mothers. Sonic can just work as his own. The less explanation about where he comes from, I think, the better. Better to keep him mysterious. And although maybe not, maybe there is, you know, maybe just the, maybe the right dad just hasn't come along yet. You know,
wow.
Maybe there's
Way to just walk it back.
No, so I feel very strongly that Sonic should have a dad or not have a dad.
Or not
I feel
one.
Very strongly.
Either way, you feel strongly, and that's what we like on the GHC. Yeah. So I'm going to piggyback off your first point and say I agree. You shouldn't go into his past. Explore the history of Knuckles, the Chaos Emeralds, whatever the fuck you like. I don't care. Sonic should be free. He should be alone. He should be like the wind. And, you know, the only media that I've seen to really do that is the British Sonic comic. Obviously, it's now the best one as a result because they don't get into the weeds with his fucking parentage. So that's my last gasp. The British comics are the best ones. Ken Penders is a fucking nutcase, but we know that. But you know what? God bless him. He's doing what he feels is right, and that's very Sonic, isn't it? So
yes.
God bless us, everyone.
So
this is 2 weeks in a row now. You stole my last guess because the first half of it, at least, again, was what I was going to say. Sonic doesn't need parents. So again, mirroring both Grant and Josh, Sonic doesn't need a family. His family is his friends and all the little animal buddies and all that. And I think we mentioned earlier in the podcast, it doesn't add anything to Sonic's character to give him a family or to try and contextualize like why he is the way he is. If they can find a way to do that, sure. But I don't think that that's possible or necessary, right? Why do it?
Nah, fuck.
Leave it alone.
Yeah. So I'm going to agree with you guys. Sonic he doesn't need a family. He shouldn't have a family. He doesn't need a dad. But of the two dads he does have, Jules is the virgin. Paulie is the chat.
Wow.
There it is.
Wow.
Does Nick have a last gasp?
Gasp away. I got a last gasp for you. I think that Jules is stupid, but I think it's cool. I think it's cool that he exists because it's just one of those things where it's like, I hope there reaches a point where this is viewed as a kind of oddity, as like I'm trying to remember the character's name, but like Horhash Equish, I think is there's a Star Wars X-wing pilot who's a horse, and it's just like this is so outrageously dumb. But
with the hooves. Is pilot's name with his like little hooves?
It's like a race of horse-like aliens.
What?
And he's very clearly a horse piloting an X-wing, and it's one of those things that's from like a comic that's been mostly forgotten. But I think as lore expands, and I think it's good for dumb stuff to exist because it's just sort of like, well, whatever. Like it can be whatever, and then we'll. Heck, in a sense, it seems like this podcast and the friendship between the four of you is based off of complaining about stupid things in the Sonic universe. So ultimately, I don't know. I think that creates some bonds between fans to have a little bit of dumb stuff at the margins. But yeah, keep the canon clean. The canon doesn't. We don't necessarily need a canonical Sonic father. We can dispense with that.
Right on. We're in agreement.
Wow. Very it's been decided. Nailed it.
Nailed it. All right. Here we are. All right. We're going to go around and give our final scores. Time bonus plus 50,000. Our shortest episode. Our most concise episode. Yeah, Nathan, what's our ring bonus?
Oh, ring bonus. 100,000.
Josh, what's our cool bonus?
I'm going to give a cool bonus of 5.
Lee, what's our total score?
5? 5?
1 point for each of us.
Yeah.
Because we're all
very
cool.
Very cool.
I think Nick's worth at least 2.
Sorry.
Six.
Right. Sorry. Cool bonus of 6 out of 7 possible Chaos Emeralds.
All right, fine. What's the total score, Lee?
Oh, so our final, wait, total score or final rank? Are we giving that to Nick?
Total score. How are we doing this? Yeah, we're going to do the rank with Nick. You're going to
do as you're told, Lee.
Fuck.
And we're going to check the math, too. So
a million. Right. A million.
All right, fine. That's exactly right.
Wait, wait. Wow. Million and six.
Million six. And Nick, on a scale of E to S, rate this episode.
The time I get to spend with the four of you discussing the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise, that's an S in my book.
Oh,
any day.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
But from a listener standpoint, deary.
Very fair. Well, that's it. This has been the show. thank you for joining us, Nick Weiger. Yes. Thank you for joining us, Josh, Lee, Nathan, and me.
Hello.
This is the GHC podcast. Rate us highly wherever you're listening to us. And
don't forget to listen to Doughboys and all that. Do a plug, Doughboys quick. You've got about 10 seconds. Quick, plug yourself.
Doughboys is a podcast about chain restaurants and how do things get played, where we play the worst and weirdest video games of all time. Check it out.
Yeah.
So fast.
Gotta go fast.
Gotta go fast.
You send your listeners to us. We'll send our listener to you. Good stuff.